after only the first intravenous administration of vitamin C. He also noted that the yellowing effect of the associated jaundice would take 4 to 5 days to clear, well after the patient feels better. He attributed this to an actual staining of the skin by the excessive amounts of bilirubin that circulate in the blood during acute hepatitis. Cathcart lamented in his writings that he was simply confounded by the fact that such an inexpensive, simple, non-toxic, and extraordinarily effective therapy was not routinely used for a disease that disables and or kills so many people worldwide. Further evidence for the ability of vitamin C to destroy hepatitis-causing viruses can be found in the work of Morishinga and Murata. From 1967 to 1973, hospitalized patients who received whole blood transfusions also received anywhere from 2,000 to 6,000 milligrams of vitamin C daily after the transfusions were given. 12 cases of hepatitis were seen in a group of 170 patients who received little or no vitamin C after their transfusions, incidence 7%, and only 3 cases of hepatitis were seen in a group of 1,367 patients who received 2,000 milligrams or more of vitamin C daily after their transfusions, incidence 0.2%. With even higher doses of vitamin C, especially if given intravenously, this incidence of post-transfusion hepatitis should be virtually zero. Nodal et al. Published data claiming to refute the positive data outlined a moment ago. However, the vitamin C dosing administered by these investigators continued only 16 days after the transfusions, as contrasted to almost 6 months by Morishinga and Murata. Also, Morishinga and Murata gave their patients substantially larger daily doses of vitamin C for this longer period of time. Unfortunately, the scientific literature on vitamin C, both past and present, continues to attempt to debunk the many incredible clinical effects of vitamin C on various conditions by conducting studies that use much smaller doses for much shorter periods of time. Furthermore, few debunking studies ever use the highly effective intravenous administration of vitamin C at any dose. Russian investigators, using much smaller doses of vitamin C in their viral hepatitis patients than the curative doses noted earlier, nevertheless documented significant improvements in laboratory test results. Komar and Vasilev administered only 300 or 400 milligrams of vitamin C daily, along with several other vitamins, B3, B6, and B12. They noted significant improvements in levels of immune proteins in the blood, as well as in the function of immune cells. Vasilev et al. Had earlier made the same finding using only 300 milligrams of vitamin C daily for 2 to 3 weeks. Vasilev and Komar also determined that this same dose of vitamin C clearly resulted in a more rapid recovery of the depressed T lymphocyte levels seen in acute viral hepatitis. Part of the reason for vigorous vitamin C therapy in acute hepatitis is that the disease process itself rapidly utilizes the existing body tissue stores and blood levels of vitamin C present prior to the disease. This increased rate of vitamin C utilization is actually seen in all infectious diseases and virtually all non-infectious medical diseases. Dubay et al. Looked at the plasma levels of vitamin C in patients with viral hepatitis and found those levels to also be significantly decreased. The scientific evidence has clearly established that acute viral hepatitis can be easily cured when enough vitamin C is administered in the early stages of the disease. This early treatment also provides strong assurance that the acute hepatitis will not just appear to spontaneously resolve while actually evolving into the long-term infection of chronic hepatitis, which can sometimes occur in acute hepatitis untreated by vitamin C and given only supportive care. The symptoms of chronic hepatitis nearly always respond well to vitamin C therapy, And some cases of chronic hepatitis may actually be curable if enough vitamin C is given for a long enough period of time. However, clearly supporting data for the cure of chronic hepatitis by vitamin C could not be found, and probably has yet to be definitively gathered. The data on the decreased incidence of post-transfusion hepatitis in patients taking enough daily vitamin C is also compelling evidence that a high enough daily dose of vitamin C should ensure that acute viral hepatitis is a completely preventable and curable disease. Although less readily apparent, a very significant benefit of properly dosed vitamin C would be the elimination of any need or reason to vaccinate people against hepatitis. This would further protect the population from any of the negative consequences that are sometimes seen with such vaccinations. Klenner also had striking success in the effective symptomatic treatment and eventual cure of virtually all viral diseases that he treated with vitamin C. More viral diseases, only some of which Klenner had the opportunity to treat with vitamin C, will now be addressed and discussed separately. Measles, curable and preventable. The 21st edition of the Cecil Textbook of Medicine characterizes measles as an acute and highly contagious disease accompanied by fever, cough, runny nose, inflamed eyes, and a rash. Although significant complications are relatively rare, measles can sometimes be fatal when the disease proceeds to a viral pneumonia or to a viral brain infection. The Cecil Textbook of Medicine states that there is no specific antiviral therapy for measles, and bed rest remains the recommended treatment in the absence of complications. Attempted prevention of measles by the use of measles, mumps, and rubella, MMR vaccine, is the primary intervention offered by modern medicine for this disease. Klenner dealt with the treatment of measles in the care of his own young daughters. They contracted the disease during an epidemic in North Carolina during the spring of 1948. Vitamin C therapy was started as soon as the diagnosis of measles was clinically certain. Klenner was very confident that high doses of vitamin C would destroy the virus at any point, and he proceeded to see what smaller doses of vitamin C would do to the development of the disease. Doses of 1,000 milligrams by mouth every 4 hours clearly improved the symptoms, although smaller doses were noted to allow the disease to progress. When Klenner proceeded to administer 1,000 milligrams by mouth every 2 hours, all evidence of the infection was cleared within 48 hours. However, discontinuation of the vitamin C at this point allowed a return of the disease. Klenner was able to demonstrate that the measles could be symptomatically controlled, but not eradicated by this pattern of vitamin C dosing for a period of 30 days. At this point, he again gave 1,000 milligrams every 2 hours around the clock for 4 days, and the infections were permanently eradicated. Klenner noted that for the first time, a virus infection could be handled as if it were a dog on a leash. This single clinical experiment conducted by Klenner probably best exemplifies that vitamin C simply must be given in high enough doses for a long enough period of time to effectively kill an invading virus. Following the successful treatment of measles in his daughters, Klenner proceeded to treat new cases of measles with intravenous or intramuscular vitamin C. He noted that he could achieve complete control of the disease within 24 to 36 hours after starting the treatment, with the response differing only because of variable doses and frequencies of administration. Klenner also noted that his patients were able to develop complete immunity to recontracting measles, even when he had intervened early and cured the disease before the rash was ever allowed to develop. Klenner reported the case of a 10-month-old infant with reddened eyes and throat, high fever, 105 degrees Fahrenheit, cough, runny nose, and Koplik's spots. Koplik's spots are essentially the typical rash spots seen in measles that appear on the mucous membranes inside the mouth prior to skin eruptions. A 1,000 milligram dose of vitamin C was given intramuscularly every 4 hours. After only 12 hours, the cough had subsided, the red eyes and throat had cleared, and the temperature had normalized. However, Klenner wanted to see whether the fever was just fluctuating or actually responding to the vitamin C like an antibiotic. No vitamin C was given over the next 8 hours, and the fever went back to 103.4 degrees Fahrenheit. After vitamin C therapy was restarted, the fever promptly decreased, and the baby made a complete and rapid recovery. No measles rash ever developed on the skin, and Klenner noted that over the next 4 years, the baby did not contract measles. This is consistent with an acquired immunity to the disease, even though the disease never became completely expressed clinically. Klenner also treated a 22-month-old baby with a similar clinical picture to the 10-month-old baby noted earlier. This baby responded rapidly in the same manner to vitamin C therapy, and the parents insisted on hospital discharge after only 36 hours. Apparently still infectious, the baby's brother and sister developed measles 4 days later, and the baby broke out with measles 7 days later. This again reinforces the absolute need to use enough vitamin C for a long period of time. Paez de la Torre also reported good results treating measles with vitamin C. Kelocorinos reported the responsiveness of measles to vitamin C, and he added the importance of using the intravenous or intramuscular form of administration for optimal and reliable effect. As mentioned earlier, measles can kill when it invades the brain or the lungs. Klenner discussed the case of an 8-year-old boy who presented with encephalitis, a viral infection and inflammation of the brain, as a complication of measles and mumps. The boy was notably drowsy and listless, and his mother related that the child's increasing stupor, which was associated with headache, had developed over the prior 4 or 5 days. Although a very active child, he went to bed on his own with a temperature of 104 degrees Fahrenheit. Klenner immediately gave 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C intravenously, and since no hospital beds were available, the child was then sent home. After 2 hours, the child developed an appetite, began playing around the house, and for several hours looked as though he had completely recovered. However, after 6 hours, his symptoms began to return. About 18 hours after the initial vitamin C injection in the office, Klenner gave another 2,000 milligram dose of vitamin C intravenously and added 1,000 milligrams to be given orally every 2 hours. Consequently, the following day found the child free of fever and symptoms. Wary of a relapse, however, Klenner gave yet another 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C by vein and continued the oral regimen for another 48 hours. The child made a complete recovery and never demonstrated any evidence of brain damage, even as long as 5 years later. Such damage is very common after surviving encephalitis. Klenner added that similar cases to this boy had shown even more rapid and dramatic responses when the vitamin C was given by injection every 2 to 4 hours. Klenner also published some observations on the ability of vitamin C to protect those at risk from contracting measles during an epidemic. Not unexpectedly, the primary consideration was dose. Klenner found that 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C by injection every 6 hours gave complete protection. However, as much as 1,000 milligrams given in fruit juice every 2 hours did not provide complete protection. This is further dramatic evidence that many of the so-called megadoses of vitamin C that are researched and published are very insufficient in the face of an enormous viral exposure. Anything in gram versus milligram doses is considered megadose in much of the literature, even if it is only 1 or 2 grams, 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams. However, acute diseases, especially infectious ones, metabolize and utilize vitamin C at a seemingly astronomical rate. Measles is an infectious disease especially notorious for causing nosebleeds. Bleeding caused by the fragility of tiny blood vessels, capillaries, is also one of the characteristic findings in scurvy. This bleeding tendency resolves very reliably and promptly after the first or second injection of vitamin C. The overwhelming virus load seen in an acute case of measles may well often induce an acute case of scurvy, at least with regard to a greater likelihood of bleeding. Whenever a maintenance dose of several thousand milligrams of vitamin C still allows some infectious disease, such as measles, to take hold, vastly higher doses of vitamin C must still be immediately instituted to deal with the infection. The fact that the disease took hold while the individual was faithfully taking several thousand milligrams of vitamin C daily does not negate a much higher dosing of vitamin C as the treatment of choice. The immune function in patients with measles was also demonstrated to be enhanced by the administration of vitamin C. Jaffe et al. Were able to demonstrate that vitamin C allowed for a more rapid recovery of certain lymphocyte subsets. This information alone might not seem to be very significant, but it makes a lot of sense in the context of the clinical responses that Klenner reported. Like polio and hepatitis, measles is one more disease that is completely curable by properly dosed vitamin C given by the proper route. Also, when adequate doses are ingested regularly, measles can also be prevented. Other vitamin supplementation is also a good idea. Goskowitz and Eichenfield noted that an acute vitamin A deficiency can be seen in children with measles, usually associated with more severe disease. However, because vitamin C can promptly cure a fully developed case of measles, the ability to prevent the infection is not nearly so important. In fact, a valid argument can be made that contracting the disease, curing it with vitamin C, and then attaining the resultant long-term immunity to the disease might be the most desirable way to proceed. This is especially true since adequate vitamin C may not always be readily available, and or there may not be a doctor willing to dose it properly when the disease strikes. Mumps, curable and preventable. Mumps is another common viral disease that most commonly afflicts children. The disease is usually self-limited, and it is characterized by the swelling of the parotid glands, giving a chipmunk-like appearance to the face. In the susceptible child, mumps can also end up involving the brain. Glands other than the parotids, including the pancreas and the thyroid, can sometimes become inflamed. In some boys, and often in men, the virus can affect one or both testicles. According to the Cecil Textbook of Medicine, mumps is another viral disease for which there is currently no established role for antiviral drugs, corticosteroids, or passive immunotherapy. Immunization remains the primary intervention offered by modern medicine to deal with this disease. In patients who have already contracted mumps, supportive measures are the main therapeutic interventions. Klenner reported tremendous success with the vitamin C treatment of mumps. Using a vitamin C treatment protocol comparable to that used with the other viral diseases already mentioned, Klenner noted that 33 out of 33 cases of mumps responded promptly. The general profile of clinical response was remarkably similar in these patients. Fever was gone after 24 hours, pain was gone after 36 hours, and the parotid swelling was resolved after 48 to 72 hours. Klenner also noted that two of these rapidly responding 33 cases were already complicated by orchitis, or testicular inflammation. One of these cases was a 23-year-old man who developed severe swelling, the size of tennis balls, and pain in both testicles. This patient also had a fever of 105 degrees Fahrenheit. Klenner gave him 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C by vein every 2 hours. The severe testicular pain began to subside after the first injection and was completely gone within 12 hours. The high fever was resolved after 36 hours, and the patient was out of bed feeling his old self by 60 hours. A total of 25,000 milligrams of vitamin C was given to this man during this 60-hour period. Klenner, July 1949, reported on the differing clinical courses he observed in three cousins with mumps and receiving different therapeutic regimens. A 7-year-old boy was given the old routine of bed rest, aspirin, and warm camphor oil applications, and was noted to have a rough time for a week. An 11-year-old boy was allowed to develop his mumps without any therapy to the point of maximum swelling. At this point, he was given 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C intramuscularly every 2 to 4 hours. Klenner found the boy to be entirely well in only 48 hours. The third cousin, a 9-year-old girl, had vitamin C started when the parotid gland swelling was felt to be still increasing, having reached only about 60% of its anticipated enlargement. This patient was given 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C intravenously every 4 hours and was considered to be completely well in 72 hours. Klenner observed that some children would present to him with what he termed a mixed virus picture. For example, he characterized one such clinical presentation as one of receding mumps and developing measles. Whenever he encountered such a mixed picture, he found that he generally needed to use approximately double the dose of vitamin C that he would use for either disease singly. Klenner's clinical observation meshes well with the concept that any given viral load requires its own amount of vitamin C to be killed and or neutralized. If double the viral load is present, then double the dose of vitamin C will be needed. Otherwise, the likelihood of a therapeutic failure of the vitamin C will increase. Mumps appears to be yet another viral disease that can routinely be cured by the proper administration of vitamin C. Although no specific studies can be cited, it seems very logical to conclude that if vitamin C can so readily cure mumps and its worst complications, then preventing mumps with vitamin C should be easy to accomplish. A mere exposure to the mumps virus will always involve an exposure to a lower total viral count than that encountered after the disease has already taken hold and massive viral multiplication has taken place. If vitamin C can kill huge challenges of mumps virus, then substantially smaller challenges should also easily be met. Even the complicated cases of mumps, such as those with orchitis, appear to respond extremely well. The next disease to be examined, viral encephalitis, also responds very dramatically to vitamin C. Many such cases of encephalitis are never completely diagnosed as to the identity of the infecting virus. These cases represent not only complicated cases of mumps, but also of measles and other childhood viral diseases that encounter individuals with depleted vitamin C stores or otherwise sickly immune systems. Whenever a given therapy can readily cure the significant complications of an infectious disease, curing the routine presentation of that disease presents no obstacle. Viral encephalitis, curable and preventable. Viral encephalitis refers to a viral infection and inflammation of the brain. Depending upon how far the infection has progressed, the patient may be confused, lethargic, or even comatose. Fever and headache are almost always present, and the remainder of the symptoms will depend largely upon which virus is responsible for the infection. Virtually any virus has the capability of infecting the brain if there exists enough compromise of the patient's immune system. The Cecil Textbook of Medicine lists over 40 different viruses that can infect the central nervous system, adding that more than 50 viruses have been found to be associated with such infections. The central nervous system refers to the brain and all of its directly related nervous tissues. Except for the viral encephalitis that can be associated with a herpes infection, the recommended treatment from the medicine textbooks for viral encephalitis in general is once again supportive and aimed at relief of symptoms only. Although most cases of encephalitis are not fatal, statistically, The encephalitis associated with AIDS or rabies is almost always uniformly fatal. Furthermore, encephalitis associated with certain other viruses has anywhere from a 10% to a 50% rate of fatality. For this reason, encephalitis is never a condition for which one can assume a favorable outcome. The offending virus in many cases of encephalitis goes undiagnosed, and all cases should be treated as vigorously as possible. Klenner reported a great deal of success in treating viral encephalitis with vitamin C. Once again, high enough doses of vitamin C given over an adequate period of time will routinely cure this disease. Klenner termed the response that he repeatedly witnessed when treating viral encephalitis with vitamin C as dramatic. Even though it may seem that some given patients should already have progressed too far to be brought back with vitamin C therapy, Klenner never reported this happening, and many of his patients had very advanced infections. Indeed, Klenner repeatedly cured patients who were already comatose with encephalitis. The dramatic response of viral encephalitis to vitamin C is especially impressive when one considers how many medicines cannot penetrate into the nervous system either partially or totally. This blockade to certain substances and medicines is called the blood-brain barrier, and many molecules are incapable of gaining access to the brain and nervous tissues to any significant degree because of this barrier. However, ready access to the nervous tissues by vitamin C represents one more reason why it is such an ideal therapeutic agent. Klenner reported on the complete cure of 6 cases of viral encephalitis. 2 were associated with viral pneumonia, while 1 followed measles, 1 followed mumps, 1 followed chickenpox, and 1 followed a combined presentation of measles and mumps. The encephalitis patient following the mumps was a 12-year-old boy who developed a headache 1 week after his mumps had seemed to resolve. Within 12 hours of developing the headache, the boy had become lethargic and had a fever of 105 degrees Fahrenheit. Upon being admitted to the hospital, he was given an injection of 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C. Repeated injections of 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C were then given every 2 hours. Following the 3rd vitamin C injection, the boy was, in Klenner's words, sitting up in bed, laughing, talking, begging for food, and completely without pain. The boy was discharged 24 hours later, continuing on a maintenance regimen of vitamin C for 48 hours to guard against any possible relapse. Klenner also described the dramatic responses of 2 patients who developed encephalitis as a complication of viral pneumonia. A 28-year-old woman first had fever, chills, and a head and chest cold for 14 days. She then developed a severe headache for the last 3 days of this illness. Klenner commented that she was in a stupor when first seen and had a white foam in her mouth. Temperature measured in her armpit was 106.8 degrees Fahrenheit, even though she had already been through extensive courses of penicillin, streptomycin, and sulfa drug antibiotics. Since she was also very dehydrated, she was given her first 4,000 milligram dose of vitamin C in 1,000 cc's of intravenous fluids. 11 hours later, her temperature was down to 100 degrees Fahrenheit, and 15 hours after the first dose of vitamin C, further doses of 2,000 to 4,000 milligrams were given every 2 to 3 hours, depending upon the response. The patient had clinically recovered after only 72 hours, although maintenance vitamin C was given for 2 more weeks. Her abnormal chest X-ray took another 3 months to completely normalize. Klenner commented that in 5 other cases with viral lung involvement, the resolution of the chest X-ray could be expected to lag behind the normalization of the clinical symptoms, depending upon how abnormal the chest X-ray had become. Another dramatic case of viral encephalitis treated by Klenner involved a 19-month-old baby. This baby had been sick with a little cold for about 2 weeks, when a fever began over the prior 24 hours. 12 hours before admission, the baby had some focal seizures involving the right arm and leg. Klenner described the baby as an undernourished infant lying rigid in its mother's arms, skin cold to touch, color cadaver-like, eyes closed, grade 2 mucopurulent nasal discharge, throat red. The temperature was 103.8 degrees Fahrenheit, and Klenner further commented that some areas of skin over the infant's back resembled rigor mortis. A 1,000 milligram dose of vitamin C was given intramuscularly and repeated every 4 to 6 hours. Klenner noted that with the first vitamin C injection, the baby did not move, and the sensation was like that of sticking an orange. 2 hours after this first injection, the baby took 240 cc's of orange juice, its first nourishment in 24 hours. Total paralysis of the right arm and right leg was noted at this time, but this lost function was subsequently regained within about 12 hours of admission. The rest of the recovery was uneventful. Klenner compiled one study that dealt solely with viral encephalitis as a complication of pneumonia. One patient, a 58-year-old female, had suffered with a head and chest cold for 10 days. She was hospitalized after having a convulsive seizure and was given 24,000 milligrams of vitamin C in an intravenous infusion for a total of 3 doses at 8-hour intervals. A 4,000 milligram oral dose of vitamin C was given every 4 hours, and 24 hours after admission, the patient had developed a complete paralysis of her right arm and right leg. Fortunately, this completely resolved after 48 more hours. Although the patient had associated cardiac problems, her viral infection nevertheless completely resolved. Klenner described another dramatic case. A 23-year-old male was brought to the emergency room in a semi-coma. His friends had found him unconscious in a telephone booth. It was later determined that the man had been bothered with a cold for 2 weeks and a severe headache for the past 5 days, for which he had consulted another physician earlier on the same day. Upon admission, 30,000 milligrams of vitamin C was given in an infusion of 350 cc's of glucose and water. 5 more doses were repeated at 8-hour intervals. He was also given 4,000 to 6,000 milligrams orally every 4 to 6 hours. After 6 days of hospitalization, his parents had transferred him to a teaching hospital, which verified the diagnosis of viral encephalitis. He received no further treatment there and was discharged to home. Klenner treated another patient, a 22-year-old male, initially described as being unconscious at another emergency room. When Klenner saw him, however, he was wildly delirious, thrashing about and needing to be subdued. History later revealed that the man had endured a dull to severe headache for several days. He later collapsed, and the ambulance driver actually thought the man was dead, but still needed to be pronounced dead by a doctor. A 100,000 milligram dose of vitamin C was given by vein over the first 24 hours. A 4,000 milligram oral dose every 4 to 6 hours followed this and led to the patient's recovery. Ironically, even Klenner didn't always use enough vitamin C. His own 7-year-old son developed lethargy and fever after about 6 weeks of flu-like symptoms. The child had received only moderate doses of vitamin C for those weeks, along with sulfa drugs, which had some minimal effectiveness, until the traditional breakthrough symptoms of encephalitis appeared. Klenner then gave a 6,000 milligram dose of vitamin C intravenously every 6 hours. A 10,000 milligram dose of vitamin C was also given by mouth, and recovery was noted to be complete by 24 hours. Klenner also described an especially deadly syndrome of viral encephalitis that he attributed to an insidious virus. As mentioned previously, few cases of viral encephalitis get specifically diagnosed with regard to the precise identity of the infecting virus. Klenner frequently saw a viral encephalitis that started with either the flu for 2 to 4 days prior or with a mild cold that lingered for several weeks prior to presentation. Klenner further noted that the onset of the encephalitis was typically heralded by any of a number of symptoms, including seizures, extreme excitability and agitation, severe chills, strangling while trying to eat or drink, collapse and/or stupor. He repeatedly observed that viral encephalitis presenting in such a manner was especially capable of killing the patient in very short order. Klenner felt the syndrome was similar, if not identical, to the syndrome of acute hemorrhagic encephalitis. Anytime hemorrhage complicates any disease process, it is a very strong indication that the body stores of vitamin C have been especially severely depleted. And because death can be rapid, the initial and subsequent vitamin C dosing must be even more aggressive than usual. Klenner was particularly sensitized in this regard, as he reported that he had seen children die within 30 minutes to 2 hours after being admitted to the hospital for encephalitis without receiving vitamin C. In his paper dealing with viral encephalitis, Klenner asserted that in spite of the very real possibility of sudden death, he had never yet failed to see full recovery from encephalitis with the use of very large doses of vitamin C. Klenner also treated a 16-month-old infant who suddenly collapsed and was unconscious after having had a mild cold for 2 weeks prior to presentation. The baby received 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C intramuscularly and regained consciousness in 10 minutes. An additional 2,000 milligrams was injected after the baby was moved to the hospital room. These injections were continued every 2 hours for 5 doses and then extended to every 4 hours for 12 more doses. The fever noted on admission had normalized within 60 hours and discharge was on the 7th day. Klenner also often used antibiotics along with vitamin C if he had any suspicion at all that any superimposed bacterial infection was playing a role in the illness. One especially interesting case treated by Klenner was a 73-year-old male who ended up being hospitalized 3 times in a 24-day period. The patient was first brought in by ambulance unconscious after having a cold for 10 days, followed over the next few hours by a severe headache, a chill, and then sudden unconsciousness. Fever, rapid heart rate, and rapid breathing rate were all noted as a dose of 20,000 milligrams of vitamin C was slowly infused. This was repeated 8 hours later. The patient regained consciousness about 18 hours after admission, and he was discharged on the 3rd hospital day. 2 weeks later, the patient presented in a similar fashion, was treated the same way, and then went home on the 4th hospital day. Once again, the patient was readmitted a week later in a similar state, except that he was conscious. On this 3rd visit, he received virtually the same treatment, except that the 20,000 milligram dose of vitamin C was increased to 24,000 milligrams. He was discharged on the 3rd hospital day with a 10,000 milligram daily dosage of vitamin C being prescribed. The patient remained well and had no further relapses. Once again, this case report from Klenner demonstrates unequivocally that enough vitamin C must be used for a long enough period of time, or the viral disease will not be eradicated and can be expected to recur. Klenner is particularly emphatic about the treatment of viral encephalitis when he asserts that it must be treated heroically. In contrast to other less grave diseases, Klenner is absolutely clear that the initial doses of vitamin C must be given by needle, intravenous or intramuscular, and the subsequent initial dosing must be maintained around the clock on an uninterrupted schedule. Destro and Sharma reported on their experience in treating bacterial and viral meningitis with vitamin C. As diseases go, meningitis is closely akin to encephalitis, since both infections involve the central nervous system. The doses of vitamin C necessary to properly treat a case of meningitis are comparable to those needed for a case of encephalitis. These researchers found no appreciable ameliorating effect of the vitamin C that they administered compared to placebo. However, none of Klenner's work was cited in their bibliography, which was readily apparent from the vitamin C doses they used. They never exceeded an initial intravenous dose of 100 milligrams per kilogram. Klenner would go as high as 700 milligrams per kilogram, and their subsequent doses were only 50 milligrams per kilogram. Also, the frequency of dosing was less often than that of Klenner, who continued to dose vigorously until the patient clearly improved and the fever came down. Only then did Klenner start spacing out his doses as infrequently as Destro and Sharma. Given these comparisons with Klenner's dosage levels, the lack of effect that these researchers found was exactly what would be expected. Klenner and many other clinicians repeatedly emphasized that if you don't use enough vitamin C, especially in life-threatening infectious diseases, you will see little or no beneficial effect. It is truly a shame that these researchers were not aware of Klenner's work, as a replication of Klenner's protocols would have been invaluable in educating the medical world on what properly dosed vitamin C could achieve. As a specialist in both cardiology and internal medicine, I have had the opportunity to witness at least two cases of aggressive encephalitis, presumably viral in origin. One case was a friend of the family with a history of headaches over a short period of time before he went to his doctor and ended up in the hospital. When I visited him, he was already intermittently slipping into unconsciousness. He was in a complete coma by the next day and died about a week later. In the second case, I was the treating physician. A middle-aged man was noted to be not right by his wife. He seemed perfectly normal to me, but I did a spinal tap since the wife was so concerned. A few cells were seen in the spinal fluid, which represented only the most minimal of abnormalities. Nevertheless, I trusted the wife's intuition and admitted her husband to the hospital. Within 24 hours, he was dead. I stayed up all night, helplessly witnessing his rapid deterioration. Even today, it amazes me that a virus can take someone's life so quickly. Viral encephalitis is a very dangerous disease, capable of progressing to death very quickly. Klenner's observations on this disease are especially impressive to me, and I only wish I had known then what I know now. Viral encephalitis, which can be rapidly fatal or often leave its victim with a variable degree of brain and neurological damage, is another disease that is completely curable by the aggressive dosing of vitamin C. Also, using the same reasoning that was utilized on the previously discussed viral diseases, viral encephalitis is a completely preventable disease when adequate doses of vitamin C are taken on a regular basis. Chickenpox and herpes infections, curable and preventable. These diseases are being addressed together, since the infecting viruses are closely related to one another. Chickenpox, also known as varicella, is a common viral childhood disease, typically identified by its characteristic rash. Depending upon the immune status of the patient, the disease can range from being almost inconsequential to causing death. Herpes zoster, shingles, results from a reactivation of the varicella zoster virus already lying dormant in the body. It also has a characteristic rash that overlies the distribution of an affected nerve. Typically, herpes zoster is an exceptionally painful condition. As with the other viral infections, treatment is generally only supportive. Another type of herpes virus, herpes simplex, fever blisters, genital herpes, is felt to be responsive to the antiviral drugs vidarabine and acyclovir. However, these agents cannot be relied upon to actually cure the viral infection. Infectious mononucleosis will also be addressed here, as this disease is also typically caused by a herpes virus. Mononucleosis is characterized by fatigue, headache, fever, sore throat, generalized swelling of the lymph nodes, and mild hepatitis. The symptoms of mononucleosis will often persist for months, and the Cecil Textbook of Medicine asserts that almost all normal people will completely recover from this disease within 3 to 4 months. Klenner reported having excellent results in the vitamin C treatment of chickenpox, shingles, and herpes simplex. Klenner treated a series of 8 adults who had shingles. A 2,000 to 3,000 milligram dose of vitamin C was given by injection every 12 hours, and 1,000 milligrams was given orally every 2 hours. The severe pain associated with the skin lesions, which can often persist for weeks before completely resolving, was completely gone in 7 of 8 patients within 2 hours of the first vitamin C injection. Although no pain-killing medications were administered, the pain relief was permanent. The skin lesions, which can persist for weeks, had completely resolved in 7 out of 8 patients within 72 hours. Each patient received from 5 to 7 total injections of vitamin C. One of the patients had the skin lesions of shingles over his abdomen. For 36 hours, he had been taking opiate pain medications without any significant relief. Within 4 hours of the initial 3,000 milligram intravenous injection of vitamin C, he was pain-free. Danow reported success in the treatment of 14 cases of shingles with vitamin C injections. Zurich, noting a clinical response like that of Klenner, published the results of 327 shingle cases treated with vitamin C. Complete resolution of the disease in all of these patients was seen within 72 hours after administering vitamin C injections. Klenner emphasized the importance of continuing the vitamin C treatment for herpes infections for a sufficient period of time. With fever blisters, healing would appear complete after 2 vitamin C injections, but recurrence was noted when the vitamin C was discontinued after only 24 hours. Chickenpox showed a similar response as that of shingles to Klenner's vitamin C therapy. The itching wet rash would show some drying in the first 24 hours, and clinical wellness was restored by the 3rd or 4th day. Smith described Klenner's experience in treating his own daughter for chickenpox. Although the child was given 24,000 milligrams of vitamin C orally each day, the rash appeared to worsen, and the itch increased. After only 1,000 milligrams was administered intravenously, the itch stopped, and the child was able to sleep well for 8 hours. Another intravenous dose was then given, and there was no further progression of the rash. Perhaps by wanting to avoid sticking his own daughter with a needle, Klenner was able to provide one more especially striking example of the superiority of injected vitamin C over oral vitamin C, especially when prompt control over infection is needed. Klenner also pointed out that viral encephalitis, which can occur following a wide variety of viral infections, is an especially severe disease when the infecting virus is herpes simplex. Lerner et al. Published estimates that 1/3 of such cases of encephalitis result in death, and approximately 8 of 9 survivors have some residual brain damage. The current Cecil Textbook of Medicine asserts that only 15% of herpes simplex encephalitis patients die. Perhaps the recently introduced antiviral drugs have helped reduce this number. However, Klenner reported no failures in the treatment of encephalitis, regardless of the offending virus. The recoveries of the vitamin C-treated encephalitis victims were complete, and Klenner observed no long-term brain or neurological damage. Cathcart also reported success with the treatment of acute herpes infections using oral vitamin C. Cathcart often used large oral doses of vitamin C in the treatment of other infections as well. Specific cases were not outlined, and Cathcart noted that recurrent disease was especially common if the disease had already entered a chronic phase. He suggested that intravenous vitamin C might be a benefit for chronic herpes infections. This appears to be yet another example of the need to initially attack any significant viral infection with intravenous vitamin C in order to obtain an optimal clinical response. Klenner did not address mononucleosis with the same detail that he provided for many of the other viral diseases. He did, however, assert that large doses of vitamin C given intravenously had a striking influence on the typically prolonged course of this disease. He briefly described one interesting case in which a hospitalized patient was in a bad enough condition that she had already been given the last rites of her church. She was not Klenner's patient, however, and the attending physician refused the mother's request to give vitamin C. However, since the patient's mother was a nurse and an ardent advocate of the benefits of vitamin C, she decided for herself to add 20,000 to 30,000 milligrams of vitamin C to every bottle of intravenous fluids administered to her daughter. Klenner noted that the girl went on to make an uneventful recovery. Dalton reported the case of a 36-year-old woman who contracted mononucleosis. The symptoms were pronounced, and her diagnosis was verified by blood testing. Only 3 daily 2,000 milligram injections of vitamin C were given, and her symptoms were resolved within 1 week. Cathcart reported good results with the administration of large oral doses of vitamin C for mononucleosis. However, significant maintenance oral vitamin C, 20,000 to 30,000 milligrams daily, was necessary for about 2 months to complete the treatment in one specific patient he described. Cathcart noted that many other cases did not require significant maintenance therapy for more than 2 to 3 weeks in order to assure no recurrence or relapse occurred. Cathcart's experience, especially when compared to the result that Dalton achieved with small intravenous doses of vitamin C, would appear to be another good example of the importance of administering at least the initial doses intravenously when treating mononucleosis or any other acute and severe viral infection. Further experimental evidence supports the ability of vitamin C to inactivate herpes virus. Sagrapanti et al. Found that vitamin C in association with cupric copper ions would kill at least one form of herpes virus, herpes simplex. Furthermore, the authors suggested that the concentrations of vitamin C and copper needed to kill this herpes virus indicated that preparations for human ingestion could be administered with only a minimal risk of any toxicity. Such suggestions indicate a lack of awareness of vitamin C's already well-established non-toxic profile. However, it is good to see that current basic researchers are reaching a conclusion that agrees with the absence of side effects already noted in many earlier clinical applications. White et al. Were also able to demonstrate that vitamin C, with the assistance of ionic copper, was able to inactivate all of the viruses tested. In addition to the inactivation of herpes simplex virus types 1 and 2, vitamin C also completely terminated the ineffectivity of cytomegalovirus, parainfluenza virus type 2, and respiratory syncytial virus. Still further evidence of the ability of vitamin C to effectively treat herpes virus infections comes from studies performed on different applications of vitamin C directly on herpetic lesions. Hamui and Berman reported that the treatment of herpes simplex virus infections with topical vitamin C shows promising effects. Hovey et al. Did a double-blind, placebo-controlled clinical trial that applied a vitamin C-containing solution against herpes lesions that erupt on mucous membranes, such as in the mouth. Based on symptom control, length of scab formation, and viral cultures, it was determined that this preparation resulted in statistically significant clinical and antiviral effects. Therese Halmy et al. Demonstrated a positive effect of oral vitamin C on recurrent herpes labialis, cold sores. This study showed a clear remission in the related symptoms from the administration of only 600 milligrams of vitamin C, along with bioflavonoids, 3 times daily. Some of the important initial groundwork establishing the likelihood that herpes viruses were killed, inactivated by vitamin C in the body, came from the work of Holden and Resnick. Their research clearly demonstrated that vitamin C in the test tube inactivated the strain of herpes virus tested. This conclusion was again tested and published a year later. In the 1937 paper, an attempt was also made to determine if the test tube neutralization of the herpes virus was a valid indicator that vitamin C could also cure rabbits directly infected with this virus. Unfortunately, after an injection of the virus into the rabbits, only a very tiny dose, 5 milligrams of vitamin C, was given subcutaneous daily for 6 days, and no demonstrable effect of this minimal vitamin C dosing on the disease development could be detected. Nevertheless, the test tube aspect of the research of Holden and Malloy was quite significant. Like other viruses discussed in this chapter, herpes and closely related viruses are extremely susceptible to the administration of vitamin C. Klenner and other researchers have reported curing such diseases with vitamin C injections. Presumably, enough daily vitamin C would also prevent such diseases from taking hold. If at all possible, it would seem prudent to always initially attack viruses of this family with intravenous or intramuscular vitamin C to achieve complete virus eradication and avoid the emergence of chronic disease due to incomplete treatment. The data for treating chronic herpetic disease, such as recurrent fever blisters or genital herpes, with high-dose intravenous vitamin C was not found. However, there is no reason to believe that this virus cannot be completely eliminated from the body if enough intravenous vitamin C is given for a long enough period of time. Viral pneumonia, curable and preventable. Viral pneumonia is a viral infection of the lungs. The diagnosis is often one of exclusion, concluding that a virus is the infecting agent after other common infecting agents, such as bacteria, have been ruled out. Viral pneumonia is often the result of a cold or upper respiratory tract infection that eventually extends into the lungs. Klenner reported 42 cases of viral pneumonia treated with vitamin C over a 5-year period. As with the other viral infections already examined, Klenner had excellent results. Once the diagnosis was entertained, Klenner started with 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C intravenously and repeated this dosage every 6 to 12 hours. For infants and smaller children, he would give 500 milligrams of vitamin C intramuscularly every 6 to 12 hours. In all of his cases, Klenner had complete clinical and X-ray response after only 3 to 7 vitamin C injections. Interestingly, he gave additional oral vitamin C in about a third of the patients, but observed no definite additional benefit. Nearly all of the patients reported feeling better within an hour of the first injection. It was for a case of viral pneumonia that Klenner first used vitamin C as an antiviral therapy in the early 1940s. A patient being treated at home with the usual supportive measures suddenly became cyanotic, turning bluish due to low oxygen. The patient refused Klenner's offer of hospitalization for oxygen therapy. Klenner, theorizing that vitamin C would somehow help improve the delivery of oxygen to the cells of the body, gave 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C intramuscularly. Within 30 minutes, the breathing had improved, and the cyanosis had cleared. When Klenner saw the patient again 6 hours later, the patient was eating and looking so much better that he gave another 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C intramuscularly. Over the next 3 days, this 1,000 milligram injection was repeated every 6 hours. Klenner wrote that the patient appeared well after only 36 hours. Klenner only happened to have vitamin C in his black bag because he had been using it to help treat diarrhea in children. Regardless, Through Klenner's inventiveness, a therapy of unequaled importance was born. Dalton reported excellent results using vitamin C on 3 cases of viral pneumonia and 1 case he termed a general viremia. His dosing of vitamin C was less than that of Klenner, but his patients resolved their illnesses much more quickly than would have been otherwise anticipated. One of the cases, a 60-year-old physician, had fever, cough, generalized